Welcome to the Intercut Podcast Channel, the weekly place to hear the latest on movies, TV, and entertainment that people can't cut away from. I'm your co-host, Zachary Shevich, and joining me, I'm going to say something, and it's probably going to make you mad. It's Arturo Zurita.
I just came back from Costco. Imagine if I had a churro with me.
Ooh. I'd take a bite of that churro.
Our most homoerotic, like, I have Caitlin with the churro on the other side. I go from Chicago to New York there.
We should have coordinated that next, maybe for the spoiler review, right?
We might have to.
Hey, listen, anytime we're in a match, I know it's going to end love. So there's a whole, no love lost here, talking about Luca Guadagnino's next film, his new film, an intoxicating, sex-soaked tennis love triangle that's partly an edge-of-your-seat sports thriller and partly a story of interpersonal romantic power dynamics. Challengers has a tantalizing trio of Zendaya, Mike Feist, Josh O'Connor, as they play a group of young tennis players over the course of 13 years, competing for each other's hearts and some Grand Slam titles along the way. Arturo, Challengers has been one of the most hotly anticipated films of the year, of last year, even. But do you think this one was aces, or did Luca hit a double fault?
Like, how was that score?
I mean, I know it's love for me. It's all maybe not, because those are zeros. Like, we got this one hit a lot of winners, right? In my book. Yeah.
How are all three actors?
Oh,
how was,
man,
that script?
Oh, man. Wait, so ending? We're talking about the literal score. An incredible score. We could talk about, like, the technical qualities of this movie for a long time. I think we could talk about just the performances and the story beats for a bunch. There's so much to dig into this movie, but I just found it to be a, like, series of pleasures. This is one of the most fun times I've had at the movies in quite a while.
I was a little confused why it was in Dolby. Not that I was like, I'll catch anything in Dolby, but I wasn't really sure. The first thing you told me when you caught it was like, it's the music, dude. I'm sitting there. Yeah, it's the switches. It's the colors. It's all of it. This is a technical feat of a movie. Mm-hmm. Not just as a sports movie, but Luca, I don't know what school he went to or who raised this man, but he knows desire like crazy. To mix what is the sweat of sex scenes and the sweat of a sports, almost Gatorade commercial. That combination and what he did here, I have never seen people profusely expire the way that they did in this movie. It was ridiculous. My whole audience left like we were leaving a concert.
Yeah, I mean, it is an experience, right? It gets the heart rate up. I felt myself doing that meme of leaning forward in your seat like a few times during this movie, especially like as the competition grows to a climax. I mean, it is such a powerful movie. And you mentioned that, like, sweat. That sweaty feeling,
ridiculous.
You know, this movie has like that like sex musk in it. It's like when you walk into a room that somebody's been having sex in, like, you just can tell it's in the air.
Was that thing you said in Anchorman? Paul Rudd had that, like, perfume, whatever that was.
Sex Panther, yeah. It's
that
on
is
it.
This
it's,
movie.
It's dripping off this movie.
We had some people who, I guess, came with their friends, never saw the trailer. When the moment happens in the hotel room, we heard
room
a
206.
Please watch the trailer before you go in case you don't know. But you'll find out really quick what the movie's about.
Definitely. And we're going to have a more spoiler-filled review on our channel later in the week when more people have had the chance to see it. But just to mention specifically, there is like that amazing sequence of scenes that take you from the party back to the motel room. And for my money, that is some of the best filmmaking. Just like script writing particularly that we've seen in quite a while. I want to talk a bit about Justin Karitskis's script, because I think that along with those performances is really the star of the show. You have this like really incredibly deft telling of these stories that starts you in like what I guess is closer to our present in 2019, and then we dip all the way back to 13 years before that, and you bounce back and forth through history, through the romantic and friendship ups and downs that this trio has with each other. I think it does a really incredible job of sort of keeping you on your toes, not really letting you know what's coming next. It kind of like, you know, the thing they're ultimately doing here is emulating the rhythms and feel of a good match of tennis, right? There's the back and forth. There's the turning of the momentum in different people's direction. And it's just the general rhythm of this movie is so propulsive and energetic and contagious.
Yeah, I like how he talked about that what had inspired him was seeing that Serena match where the coach had supposedly talked to her in that back and forth. That one, he didn't think that was a technicality, but then it really intrigued him that it was like, wait, you can't, like, every other sport has the coach right in there, boxing and in basketball. He's like, but you can't do that. And that's one thing that you notice that he put into the script, that volley, like you're saying, where all you follow the script and you follow the movie, and it's like the set matches that they have in tennis. You'll see a little bit of it, and then it'll jump back to some of the history in there. And it kind of feels like a Slumdog Millionaire thing that's going on, which is probably the only thing that has me intrigued. But it is done in a way where you need to watch the movie twice because they purposely keep information from you because of the way that it's volleying back and forth.
Definitely.
I'm not going to say that I didn't like it, but I can see people coming out of it having an issue with that part.
The way that it jumps back and forth through time. I could see that too. I mean,
if you pick a character who's manipulating, the director's manipulating you from the jump. But again, definitely. I kind of like that. It's the teasing of the movie.
Right. And it sort of again, like, goes into this whole idea of the competition and people, you know, gaining an advantage and then, you know, losing a couple rounds or something like that. And I think ultimately, I think it serves the movie. And having had the opportunity to see it twice now, I think it just sort of, like, it gives you more to dive into and it really holds up on that second viewing. But, you know, I think the thing that you were talking about also earlier is that this movie does really have a very solid understanding of what people in these situations act like, the sort of, like, fun tension that hangs in the air, right? There's so many scenes between Feist, O'Connor, and Zendaya where there's this thing that they all understand and they're not hiding from, but nobody's putting words to it. And it's that sexual tension, that romantic tension that just hangs around them. As the film progresses, there's more of the, like, a actual tension that is building between them. And the way that the movie is able to sort of make not just their on-the-court actions, but their off-the-court actions feel like tennis, feel like the back and forth and people positioning themselves to try and, like, gain advantage in the conversation. It's so much fun to watch. The script really, really has, like, a crackling energy to it.
Zendaya's been talking about it. Everyone keeps telling her about the sex scenes in the movie, and surprisingly, right, this is the threesome movie. There's making out, for sure, sure. There is no sex.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's a very sexy movie, but it's a lot of, like, implied. It's the feeling, it's the tension, but it's not a lot of release. And, you know, and the thing is, but because it's both, it's kind of like, you know, are we talking about tennis? Or are we talking about sex? They're able to kind of, like, give you some of those more, like, climactic moments almost through the sports rather than through the sensuality.
That's what Zendaya had said. She's like, everyone keeps talking about the sex, but any of the making out, all of that, that's just the teasing. The sex is the court. That's what they all want. And I like how in the script, the whole idea is that they're all seeking that, like, 15 seconds of true tennis. I like that. Because I'm starting to compare. I'm like, okay, what's that true just 15 seconds of pure filmmaking when the score and everything is just coming to a hand? It's almost like a movie where they're addicted to this high.
They don't
care if their codependent relationships are ruining themselves. You know, they got a kid in the background. That kid is just always, like, on a corner on an elevator sleeping. It really is all three of these people doing everything to seek that high. And you keep reminding me that the screenwriter is married to Celine Song.
Mr. Celine Song, the potential inspiration for Past Lives as well.
They say that he's supposed to be the middle guy.
John Magaro also guy, named
Arthur. And they got a boy in here named Arthur. Y'all doing arts wrong.
Do you feel personally attacked? Because I have gone through life feeling a lot more like an Art than I have felt like a Patrick, for sure. And there's maybe a younger, more bitter version of me that would have been, like, in my feelings about a movie like this. But
I don't mind an array of arts. Yeah, we don't have an array of arts. These right. guys, or these two, they love thruples, and they love Arts being the one in the middle. But that's where it also gets really interesting, because the way that they structure it, you start kind of teeter-tottering, like in a tennis match. Who's winning? Mm-hmm. Who's the one really manipulating who? Who do you... Exactly. And is it really a win at the end? Because I think mm-hmm. the ending ends up being more like a whiplash ending, where you're getting people split of thinking, that's great. And other people going, actually, not really. We're going to say that for later, but I think that's the crucial point to go into this movie. It's leaving it up to you to see how you observe these people. I think you said you read the script as well. You noticed some things that they took out. I'm going to have to send it to you then. Mm-hmm. There's like text messages, lines. They cut out elements.
Interesting.
That answers a lot. And you realize Luca did that on purpose because he's edging, teasing you as well.
Definitely, man. I mean, that's one of the things that I think is really brilliant about the movie is, like, there is this, like, pace to it. It really does move. And especially, I think some people aren't so sure about the way that the editing works. But when you see it in rhythm with the whole film, I think it really does add to it, because it'll go quick, quick, quick. And I hate to keep comparing it to the rhythms of tennis, but I do think it is very intentionally kind of evoking that, because there's this tension. And then when the camera will linger, so almost like a, you know, winner shot in tennis, or like a really good shot, the devastating lines, the like trump, the trump card kind of moments, those are where the camera will linger, or where it will push in and give you that close up. And I think it's very kind of like intelligently constructed. I did want to shout out the cinematographer, Sayambu Mukdipram, who, aside from working from Luca Guadagnino, primarily seems to work with Apichong Wirzethakul, the Thai filmmaker, the Uncle Boonmi guy. Yeah. And like, I can't think of films that feel more distant in terms of their visual palette than those movies and this one, because there's like an electricity to how he shoots this film. I love how often the camera will do this kind of like slow pan in and then whips from side to side, again giving you that feeling of the back and forth and the competitive nature underlying these moments. There's a particular scene in a dorm room between Josh O'Connor and Zendaya that starts out a little more a little bit you know, more sedentary, and then as the intensity picks up, that camera starts whipping back and forth. And also, there's another trick that Luca has up his sleeve that I love, where he'll start scenes, and then halfway through, he kicks in with that badass Eurodance Trent Reznor, Atticus Ross score, that like thumping house music, and it just turns the volume up on all these scenes.
Yeah, I was sitting in a Dolby theater, then that score comes in, and I'm at a gay nightclub. Like, that's the switch that was happening in this movie. You mentioned the dorm scene, the I'm your peer scene?
Yes.
I think that's my favorite scene in the movie, and probably top five by the end of the year. There is something about that scene. I'm glad you mentioned it early. I'm going to save all my thoughts on that scene for spoilers, but I keep seeing people put up frames, and I'm glad, because I wrote a huge star on my notes for that scene, because the way they were going at each other. We'll talk about who's right, who's wrong. But they were cooking together. That final shot on Zendaya and that's... I can't talk about that one anymore. That is a scene, dude. I agree with you there.
Absolutely.
But keeping with the cinematography. That one scene that not leaked, but that they released, that people were making fun of the editing. I think you were kind of like defending it, going, you need to watch the context of the movie. Was that the hotel scene where...
Yeah, the final hotel scene, yes.
Where he wants to like say what he wants to do with his career and stuff.
Yeah.
It's ugly, bro. I'm sorry. Look, I think there's still a difference between I get what the person is making, but I don't like it, right? Every filmmaker makes their movie to be good. Don't mean we're going to like it.
Sure.
Look, there's nothing wrong with it. I think it makes sense. I don't like the back and forth in that. They do like a couple of double frame shots. But then
there are jump cuts that sort of jar you in certain points. But I personally kind of vibed with it. I thought it was an interesting style.
It's effective. I will say that when it did work for me, where I could see someone doing the opposite, that, you know, the youngsters talking about Sam Raimi doing old school techniques, was when he went into his 70s bag. And now that you're bringing up the cinematographer, there is a scene that happens outside in a storm that is shot in the choppiest 70s slow motion you've ever seen. But it doesn't look like a 70s throwback.
No,
it's clearly a modern day technique that they mixed with that. Even did freeze frames. I was so astounded by it.
Yeah.
It blew me away.
Yeah,
and then the following sequence. Talk about it, because
I was just going to say, because like
crazy,
it's this rate stretched slow mo kind of look, that this like lower frame rate thing that I think you and I generally find ugly, because like, you know, it often feels like a filmmaker who didn't anticipate needing slow mo using it to compensate.
Didn't get the right camera for the frames, the frame rate. No,
it's done so intelligently, and just the way that it's utilized, it just makes this moment like so tender.
Yes.
Out of nowhere, it is a beautiful, beautiful moment.
It's crazy. Because then right afterwards, you can be like, oh, I don't get the, why do you do it like that? Doesn't he know how to choose? The whole final sequence, he gets one of the greatest cameras of all time and does like, the most insane slow-mo of sweat dropping off. So I'm like, so you do know.
He's capable of it. You do know how to do slow-mo. Right.
You are picking the cameras that you need for whatever the scene asks for. He is knocking it out of the park in every sense. There's a hallway shot where a character's walking and then they appear like a ghost. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of really, really beautiful moments in this movie. I think it's incredibly well shot. So much about it really, really pops off the screen. We should talk about the performances a little bit.
No, this has score.
Please tell me what you got, because to me this is the runaway contender for best score of the year. I mean, I've been listening to it on repeat since I first saw the movie.
They worked with him on Bones and All.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is he's one of our premier composers, but he also, or they, we should say, Ross and Reznor. You can't really predict what you're going to get. They can be a bit all over the map.
Do you know how stupid I was? There's a final song. And they credit it with the actors before the title card in the credits. And it said Trent Reznor, whatever. And they wrote a song. I'm like, damn, they're jumping into music.
Man, somebody tell Nine Inch Nails.
I'm like, awesome. I love to see them expand.
Yeah.
They're the goats. They gave Lil Nas X that song. Ain't no composers more pro-gay rights than these two right here. They knocked it out of the park. I was reading an interview where they were revealing the notes that Luca would give them. And they're like, just make it as homoerotic as possible. Every single inkling, when they drop, how they drop it. That, like you were
the
mentioning
churro the scene.
The churro scene especially. When he comes in to chase him.
Oh, man. That's another one of those moments that I love, where it's like, to even think to write that into your characters just shows an understanding of how people interact. Now let's talk performances,
because that churro scene and when they come in, is like, you see some things and you're like, this has to be ad-libbed. And then it's in the script. Mm-hmm. But then there are moments that aren't in the script. And it's like, this is such a beautiful blend of the of a scripted scenario and then what the actors are able to bring to it. In the script, he puts all of the reactions. He looks at his face and he reacts to that. He sees the expression on him. And he even said, the writer, I never expected the visual that I had of the actor to be as good as the three that Luca chose. You can see this movie on silence and know what's going on. That's
absolutely
how great they are. We thought that Zendaya Dune scene was great at the end. She's,
I mean,
got three,
look,
of those in this movie.
Her face
in the dorm,
is
on the tree.
A superpower.
Unreal, that woman.
Yeah.
She's out of the park.
She is such a radiant movie star, and it brings so much to this movie. You and I are also big fans of Mike Feist. We were really blown away by his work in West Side Story, and we're excited to see what the future held. And I think he's really, really good in this movie. But I came out of this movie telling you, Josh O'Connor is the one who really steals it. He's got the meaty part, and he's gonna win over a lot of hearts in this part.
I've been hearing him in interviews. It's really difficult, bro, not to like that boy.
Yeah.
Mike Feist, bless his soul. He puts the work in, like you said. That's why he was in West Side. He ended up doing a bunch of tennis lessons before they even got to their 6 weeks of tennis lessons for the movie. He looks the best.
Yeah, which they were both supposed to do is a bunch of prep work for the tennis and stuff.
He did even more. He started it before they started. They were supposed to do this like diet together and regimen, whatever. Josh never did it, and they didn't find out until the end. And all Josh's excuse was, they say you need rest too. He's too lovable, bro.
Yeah.
Like when they reveal stuff about him in the movie, you're like, wait, you're living this way because of that way, but you could do this thing and you don't do that thing. And it makes you question his character so much, but he's like so lovable to hate, and you hate that you love him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was a standout. I wanted more scenes with them.
Yeah, he's got this really incredible, like, sly little smile that it's hard to not, it's hard to not, like, just melt when you see that. He's got real movie star quality, and I'm glad to see him in a part like this. It makes me very, very curious what people are going to, or what he's going to get to do next. I really loved him in La Chimera, a film that just came out a couple weeks ago, and he's, like, speaking nearly fluent Italian in that, too. So this dude's a really incredible actor.
He's a powerhouse. And even for the both of them, I like them, obviously, when they play off as a trio or when they're playing out Zendaya. But when it's just them two, I loved it. When they're volleying back and forth between the flashbacks, you see the difference between of the men who they're trying to be as adults. They just, like, in the flashbacks, have this, like, walking forward thing, and it makes them feel so young. They did full a really great job with that. Yeah. I will say that Zendaya, not, you know, bless her soul, I felt she was the one where she looked a little too young for the older scenes, so that's why they always had her kid there, or they would do, like, the thing with her hair to be like, see, she doesn't have a sporty hair.
The hair generally for all three of them was really effective at communicating where in their trajectory they are.
Yeah.
Zendaya is a young person. She has a very young, like, even for her age, she's got a young face. So selling that you're already mid-30s is maybe a bit tough. But, like, in terms of the persona of it, in terms of the swagger and confidence, Zendaya never lacks for that.
She had that dog in her, especially in those early scenes before the big incident that happens. But I think it's like Oppenheimer. You know, we realize on a big screen, Killian isn't that young during those scenes, but we let it pass. It's not as big of a hit against the movie, but it was a little noticeable. I will say the clothing was also a big part. When you're talking about the time jumping, I loved, if I may, the product placement.
Yeah. The little details like that are really, really perfect.
That's the thing I complain about the most. So when you end up doing product placement better than Fight Club did, wow, bro. Dunkin' Donuts, incredible product placement and the character development that they do there. The use of the shoes. If you follow along what they wear when they're starting up to when they're in college to when they're big, they're telling you a whole story. There is merch in the back where they have the Dunkinator shirts for her.
Yeah.
But then there's, like, real quick glimpses of someone who has, like, meme shirts of art, and you're like, wait, did you just create, like, a whole world and I'm only going to be able to see parts of it? You told me that this was a big popcorn movie, but also a movie. Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
It feels real all through and through. Yeah. There's probably one critique I will say. They were too famous to maybe be at some of those matches without having a bunch of people coming up to them.
Maybe.
And the moment I thought that, a little girl came up for an autograph, and I'm like, oh, I guess you're going to use that. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. The tennis as well, I found it to be pretty convincing. You know, there's a long history of tennis movies from the Match Point one, or it's actually Wimbledon is the one that I'm thinking of with Kirsten Dunst.
Who was?
What was that? Oh, right. You want to do the Spider-Man or Mary Jane to tennis movie pipeline?
And then the Spider-Mans ended up all becoming soldiers.
Yeah, Emma Stone, who was Mary Jane, also, or I guess Gwen Stacy, Battle of the Sexes movie a couple years ago.
It was a good one, too. Yeah.
I found the tennis to be pretty convincing in this one for the most part. Like, maybe Zendaya is leaning a little bit too far back on her back foot for a couple shots.
Maybe,
I mean, I think they're pretty credible. You know, there's a few moments where the ball feels a bit too CGI. Like, the zip it has coming off the racket is maybe a bit harder than they're swinging. But, you know, particularly in the actual matches, I thought it was pretty solid.
She said, surprisingly, that it was a CGI tennis ball for a lot of it. Like, she wasn't hitting stuff. She was just told to swing like that.
Yeah.
Which is really funny when you consider that a CGI tennis ball is what they use. A tennis ball is what they use for, like, other effects. Right. Now they had nothing.
Just never replace it, this one?
Yeah. But it was interesting because it's like, okay, so you're putting it in After Effects or whatever. So they are able to do things where it zips past the camera. And in Dolby, they got me. I did one of those, bro. I was like, damn.
Duck your head out of the way.
I did. It was good. They do a great job at following it, because even if you don't know tennis, I don't think you'll be confused.
Yeah, absolutely. I just really loved this movie. I love that it's this like really joyous thing. I think there's a couple moments where you feel like it could take a turn into something that's a little bit more melodramatic, and that they really play the relationship power dynamics. You know, it's a very different movie tonally, but it got me thinking of films like Duke of Burgundy or Force Majeure that are really about like those lived-in relationship dilemmas. But it's more fun than those movies too. It's just got this zippiness to it, and
that was a good one.
I had an incredible time. To me, this is easily one of the movies of the year. I'm predicting that I'm going to have it on my best of the year midway Sick. List, and hopefully it sticks around for the end of the year. But I just had so much fun seeing this film.
Yeah, I hope it sticks around for me too. I'm excited for a second watch. My two were Y Tu Mamá También and Dreamers. Mm. Those were there the two go. That I was like, oh, those I are see what's happening here with a little.
Those are closer little to the tone of this movie. Yeah, the feel of this movie. Like
it's the idea of like what they're playing off with, not just in movies, but even in like relationships. This is so fresh and new because of the codependency that they have going on. It just has you like judging them. But also you're there seeking those 15 seconds of that tennis match.
Definitely. You know,
He is getting you to desire it also.
And in that way, it's almost a little bit like the Gavin O'Connor film Warrior with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton, too, where you're kind of on the fence. Like, I'm not sure who I'm supporting. I don't know how this is going to end up. And I think what both, you know, the thing that is so cool about this film is they sort of, you know, in the way that they are depicting the tennis, like you're saying, is that like the most exciting tennis matches are not the ones where you're watching somebody dominate somebody else. It's the ones where you're watching two competitors on a level playing field. And seeing them go back and forth in that 100%. Way, you bring the best out of each other. And the way that, you know, the parallels that they're able to use between that and relationships, the dynamic that they all have with each other as characters, I think it's so smartly written. This is easily my favorite script of the year so far.
The script for sure is a standout.
Yeah, it's. I can't wait for more people to see this one. I had such a good time.
The tournament name that they're in is ATP. That's like the thing they play in.
That's like the association that controls all of tennis. Like
what are the characters?
Like the NBA for the Oh, is it
what
Art?
Are the characters?
It's Art, Tashi, and Patrick. That's cute.
It's cute.
Yeah.
It's cute, bro.
I like it.
He just does a bunch of little things like that where you're seeing them. You know, you watch the movie again and you start noticing things because after the movie they tell you, hey, focus on like the certain symbols, signs that they can send each other. You start thinking,
also
when did they start that in the movie before I knew about it?
Exactly, right? It's all the things that they plant and seed for you to, you know, pick up on later on, whether it's lines that will be said by one character and then said by another, or like even little elements, like very early on, they establish that on-court profanity, it causes you to lose a point. And that ends up playing a role a little bit later in the film, too. It's just a very, really clever script that bookends things and brings things full circle. A lot of really excellent lines.
I was there for that match. And then they do the flashback, and you see them there.
Love
like,
it.
Just really quickly, but they're there. You saw the I don't. He's not the line judge, but the person on the chair. I forget what they call him. The officiator.
The I guess the judge. I
was like, why you look so familiar? Why do you clearly not fit in with this high goody two shoes association?
Tennis umpire.
Umpire. Okay. Do you know who played the umpire?
Who is it?
Her assistant. I recognize him from her YouTube videos. Lucas said, if you're a producer, can you convince your assistant? If you look him up, he's been assistant to Zendaya in everything on his IMDb. All the biggest pictures. That's her boy.
That's so funny. Darnell Appling.
We're getting into a little bit right here. It's not necessarily spoilers, but there is a moment. There are several moments in this movie where they break fourth walls. There's a movie drop that happens early.
Yeah,
there's even
I love that.
Stares that characters do that when I'm like, what is this for? Wow, you guys are just like on another level of subtext there. He did stand out a little bit because I'm like, everybody else is not as swagged out as you, my man. Like you are. You look too cool to be a part
drip.
Of this organization. Right? Yeah. A little too much. But that was cool to have him in there. I know Zendaya said that she had switched out certain things for her character, such as, you know, not having a nanny for a kid. It would be the mom.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like your character is different than you, so your character would have the nanny, but it's interesting to see the influences that are there, and especially how a big part of the movie is how they're going through tennis to be able to get up to the opens. Can they ever qualify? And how it, you know, it's like for actors and auditions and what they do. I think Luca just, he did a beautiful job with it and got some of the best actors to go along with. And I agree with you. I think the script is going to be the thing that makes it all the way through to the end.
For me. Absolutely, yeah. I don't know if you think this is going to be an Oscar contender. Part of me is like, this movie's like too fun to make its way to the Oscars. The but best, at the same though. Time,
that'd be awesome.
Like I feel like we've been seeing the Oscars kind of like change what we think of as the traditional Oscars movie. And, you know, this yeah. is a film from Luca Guadagnino, who has the sort of Academy seal of approval. And,
right?
and Zendaya is a hot star on the rise, who I'm sure, you know, the Academy would love to have at their ceremony. So I on one hand, it feels like not a traditional Oscars movie to me. On the other hand, I had so much fun with this one. I would not be surprised to see it pick up like we talked about a potential screenplay nomination, maybe
even it's
like
original.
An editing or cinematography nomination. I don't know what category they'd go with Josh O'Connor, score? But he's really good. Score. Oh, score 100%.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So a couple questions right here at the end. The first being, you had mentioned the script. I think it's going to be it because he's also working on Queer, which you had mentioned. It was one of your anticipated ones, also with Luca. That shows you, like, Luca's tapped in with this dude.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the three actors, we had a little bit of a discussion on the categories for which they'd be nominated for.
Yeah, so what I would guess, or at least what feels right to me, is, like, the film kind of has, at least for a good deal of it, it has two halves, right? It's the Zendaya and Mike Feist half and the Josh O'Connor half. And I feel like because a lot of Josh's story sort of takes place on its own, like, little island, he's kind of, in a way, a co-lead with Zendaya, and Mike Feist is more of a supporting role. But I'd be curious once somebody actually does the runtime math. Because it might be that it's Mike and Josh are the co-leads and Zendaya is actually supporting in this movie.
That's too much pushback. I don't think that'll be a good thing, but it's interesting because that's a little tangent to that is, has Zendaya had a lead role?
Right.
Are they doing the music thing where it's been just EPs, just mixtapes? You've been listening to an artist for 5-10 years and you're like, wait, where's the album?
No, where's the album?
Are they just waiting for the real solo Zendaya lead movie? Because you're right, I haven't seen this. I don't think it takes away from it at all. The performances are what they need to be time-wise and everything. But she isn't the solo lead. I'm going to argue make them all supporting since they're codependent on each other. Do the, what's the Lakeith and...
The Judas and the Black Messiah split between him and Zendaya Kaluuya,
Just do that. But to me, I wonder if the way that we categorize them is also who we think is in control of the story. Because I came out like you, and the more that I hear interviews, they're all well aware where people tend to side on who the scummiest are. Mm-hmm. But they've been dropping some stuff, and you may need to go check on your boy Art maybe on a rewatch. And that's the best part of it. I think that's what makes the movie so intriguing. And I think why they cut out some stuff from the script to leave that intrigue in there. But my last question for you is, yay or nay on that ending?
Oh, I'm thumbs all the way up on that ending. I loved it. In fact, like, my reaction to seeing it was thinking, damn, we actually need to add a Intercut Award for next year for best film endings. And this right now is the front runner for me.
So 10 seconds with a full censor on you and a full censor on me completely beeped. Who won?
I think. Oh,
all right. Back uncensored over here. You'll find out what we just said on Monday when we're going to be doing our live stream. All spoilers, everything in. Just the discussions online have been fascinating. I know it's not out yet, and they're already intriguing me. Just people's thoughts on the trailer, people who got to see it in the early Monday screenings. This is that movie, dude. It is a film that has us talking like your what would be your dumb pop culture movie. But this is art, this is cinema, from its score to its cinematography and to some of the best performances of this year. And I hope that they don't May December it. A little bit of a erotic movie that ends up not getting any love at the Oscars would be a shame 2 years in a row.
Definitely, definitely. You know, you've heard me say this before, but I think so often when you're going to the movies, you're faced with a choice between, am I going to go see something yes. that's like about real human emotions and drama, or am I going to be able to go see something fun? And I love that challenge. It's just like, why not both? We can do both. And it's such a great time. Yeah. So hopefully we can keep talking about this one throughout the year. We're going to talk about spoilers for this one on the channel very soon. Keep it tuned to that. But I think that's all we're going to talk about challengers for right now. So make sure you're locked to the Intercut Podcast, either the video feed on youtube.com/intercutpod or the audio feed available on all podcatchers. I'm available at Zshevich across social media, as well as at Multiplex Show, anywhere you find videos, artwork. Where can people find more from you?
LME Movies on all social medias, from Letterboxd to YouTube and all that good stuff, or every week here on the Intercut Podcast.
Yes, you can catch more from Intercut across social media at Intercut Pod. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can also support our Patreon at patreon.com/intercutpod or join our YouTube membership club. Click that button, that join button, and for as little as $3 a month, you can get access to behind-the-scenes content on Intercut, invitations to our monthly patron Google Hangouts, videos early, including this video is going to go out to patrons early, so you would have had it ahead of the general public if you just joined our membership or our Patreon. So once again, patreon.com/intercutpod or the YouTube membership. You can even support us on Spotify. There's lots of places where you can show the podcast some love, including iTunes, where you can leave us a much requested 5-star review. We always love to hear from the Intercuties and get that positive feedback, just the positive feedback. I don't need negative reinforcement. I do that enough on my own.
I'll be like art of the movie.
You can also continue the conversation on our Discord page, which you can find a link to in the description for this episode. You can get updates throughout the week from Art, from me, and from all the guests that we feature here on Intercut across those channels. Thanks again for tuning in, and until next time, are we still talking about tennis?
Talk about churros.